Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the MacBook, turn it on, turn the Bluetooth speaker on. Another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest.
You know, I got those Apple earbuds.
I can hear
turn
it
on
now.
Your Apple earbuds.
Yeah, your earbuds.
We are going to be joined by two guests today. By the way, phone number, if you'd like to call in, is 323-649-8268. Those of you on Facebook and
Periscope.
Well,
tell them what to call about. Love. We're talking about love.
Yeah, we're talking about love addiction and sort of addictive relationships and how to end them, how to get out of them, that kind of thing with Sherry Gaba. She's LCSW, licensed psychotherapist, life coach who helps people with lifelong addictions.
Got a new book.
Yep, the new
right
book.
Here,
the book is called
it.
The Marriage and Relationship Junkie. She used to help us out on Celebrity Rehab. She has been in top.
She has her own television station. I've been her own magazine. You got to go to Sherry Gaba. What is the .com? There's got to be
one.
And
it all started here with you guys.
Oh, really?
That's where it started.
So and there's a bunch of Twitter stuff I'm going to put out. One is at Sherry Gaba, right?
Uh-huh.
SHERRYGABA. At Law of Attraction Recovery. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of Facebook pages linked there. And we're also going to be joined by Jenny Ketchum, Bob, someone the three of us worked with. She was on the Sex and Love Addiction show, it was really primarily a sex addiction. And then Sober House. You worked with Jenny at Sober House.
Yeah, Sober House.
Yeah.
She was another therapist on the staff.
and with many sex addicts, they end up having a substance problem that they weren't willing to look at too. And Jenny, when she started looking at things, was like, oh, I guess I do have a problem there too. But then she got very serious about her recovery. She returned to school, completed her bachelor's, got a master's
moved
degree in social work.
Moved out of Hollywood so she could afford
Washington.
To live and go to school.
Yeah. Now she is a clinician, and she works in primary care clinics supporting a wide variety of mental health and physical health needs. And we are just so happy with her. And now she's a mom. We'll get into that with her.
And no matter how hard we try to promote all the successes out of Celebrity Rehab, the media doesn't care. They want to know about the deaths.
Right, exactly.
Right?
They don't understand it's the same percentage.
They don't know that a porn star is a licensed
LCSW.
Social worker.
Should we,
right?
should we go
don't want
to
know.
Should we go to Jenny? Can we bring her up? Jenny, you there?
You got a bottle there? You got an iPad? Is everything okay?
Go. I got a boob here. That's what's going on.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
It's one thing I don't have with my 2-year-old.
I'll tell you what, it is transformative to go from having decorative breasts to having utilitarian breasts.
Like, uh-huh.
There you go.
I am growing a person.
Yes, you are. How does it now feel to be actually going through the whole attachment process?
It's kind of wild. It's really, really a special thing. I mean, I never thought I could love somebody so deeply and like so quickly. Like she just started daycare and I just started back to work. And I've never missed anybody so much over the course of 8 hours. It's
What kind of work are you doing?
So I'm doing medical social work in a primary care clinic. This big clinic up in Seattle, they don't have any social workers in any of their clinics. It's a place called Polyclinic. And, you know, we have specialties and we also have primary care and no social workers in the whole thing.
That's
and
weird.
Then I did my internship there in their behavioral health department and, you know, sang the praises of social work and how valuable it is in terms of accessing resources and getting on the spot
treatment
health.
Plan.
And they decided to hire me as their first social worker. So, building out a department. And
one of the things that's hot in the news is, of course, our increase in suicide in this country. Are any your thoughts about that?
She's living in the suicide capital of America.
Yeah,
let's hear what's going on up there.
Yeah.
Jenny. Yeah. I mean, depression is gnarly, you know, and what's so challenging about it is that, you know, when we get the flu, for example, right? Like we get a fever and we don't suddenly convince ourselves that this is our new core temperature, right?
Right.
But you get depression and suddenly you start having these thoughts like I'm better off dead. The world is better off without me. I should hurt myself in some way, whatever the thoughts are. And then because they're thoughts, we convince ourselves that they're true and it's so dangerous.
And
right?
permanent, that they're true and permanent.
Right.
Totally. And like, they're just thoughts. Like we don't have to act on them and they're symptoms of depression. And so it's really tough. I mean, this week in particular, you know, I think Anthony Bourdain especially, like, talk about somebody who's part of your family. Yeah. What a sad thing.
And it's so interesting. There she is bonding with her baby, and I'm thinking how important that is for later mental illness.
Oh, everything.
Right?
Everything.
It's all about that attachment and trauma. We're going to be getting into love addiction, and, you know, one of the problems with love addiction is often you don't get that early attachment, that early bonding, that early developmental love. So there we are, right there, seeing it.
That's what it looks like.
And well, that's 0 to 3 is what Drew taught me.
0 to 5, really. But 0 to 3 is very important. 0 to 3. Very important.
So Sydney, I have a 21-month-old that has either been with her mother or me or both of us every second of that 21 months.
That's nice.
Because I'm playing the role in the back, like, you're safe. I've got everything protected out here. Everything is okay. Yeah. Right? And we're hoping that these more focused, nurturing children will grow up more whole, right?
Think about it. You're looking at each other. You're mirroring each other. It's such a that's how you feel secure and you feel safe, and that's how you trust the world.
And how I learned it is in trauma therapy. The therapist asked me, "Bob, is the world a safe or unsafe place?" Just real quick, right when I walked in for a session. And I said, son, safe? What the fuck kind of question is that? Anybody that thinks it's safe is an idiot. And he said, that is the telling sign of trauma.
Yeah.
Right? That you think the world is treacherous, devious, always something to be anxious and guarded and nervous about. We don't have to know what happened to you as a child. It wasn't good.
What do people like me, this naive and thinks everything's fine and people are good? I'm super naive.
Yeah,
I really am.
It's both.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. The world is both.
And that is the accurate statement. So it just perverts out. But I don't know that all this is going to end well, because I think our society is so sick it will wear away on you.
On who?
On your psyche.
I just think it goes in cycles. It has to. There have been worse times. There just have been.
There hasn't been worse times for this population.
Different.
This population, the most entitled kind of narcissistic culture that's ever existed, this society has never suffered.
And lack of connection. I mean, look at internet technology. I mean, we're doing it right now, but of course we are connecting to everybody right now, but it's that lack of connection.
You always think just the 1300s, the plague was bad. 99% of the American people don't know about the fucking plague, Drew.
I know.
They think they don't have enough stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So we need to talk about how nursing is important and child bonding. And Jenny, how did you choose to have her in daycare? That's a big decision that a lot of us nurturers are trying to battle with.
Money. Right. I need to make money.
Right.
You know, like I am not of the privileged class that can like stay at home. I mean, so in Seattle, it's just not like Seattle is turning into a little San Francisco. And realistically, I need to work and my husband needs to work. I'm only working half time. I'm working a 0.5 in the clinic. So, you know, fortunately, I get to be home with two of the work weekdays. But it's just a financial decision. And, you know, compounded by the fact that, like, I would like her to grow up knowing that that it's okay for me to work and that she'll be fine. I think developmentally being in daycare is a really good thing for her physical health, exposure to all the I hate that she got sick week one. And, you know, statistics show that she'll be less sick come kindergarten and first grade and all those other really imperative years where she's learning to read and write, right? Like, I'd rather she get sick right now.
You're not avoiding peanuts and freaking out about every little
thing?
Bring
it all on.
It's like, oh, God.
Bring it all on. I rub the cat on her face. The dog gives her kisses. You know,
what else you see in the clinic?
So I see a lot of anxiety and depression. I work with a pretty privileged population, frankly. The majority of the people who come through our clinic are insured with really great insurance. We're right down the street from Amazon. So there's a ton of anxiety and depression up in there, but that's neither here nor there. And so I work with a lot of mental health stuff on the sort of like lighter end of the spectrum. Not that depression isn't a serious thing, but it's not a but, it's
and it's people that have resources to get the help that they want. That they need.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Absolutely. And, you know, we do have, we have a certain percentage of our population that is low income or on Medicaid. And so that requires some creativity in terms of like resource brokering and like care coordination and that.
Jenny, I love that you got an LCSW. I'm an LCSW. I know Drew
well,
admires.
She's MSW. MSW?
MSW.
Yes, I have my associate. I have one more year before I'm independent.
Got it.
But I'm a huge...
I mean, I'm an independent woman.
You always talk highly about that.
Love LCSW. Yeah. I think it's a great training. I really do. Yeah. They make great therapists. Yeah. They have great training. I've said it to both of you, so it's no secret.
Yeah.
Good, you know, and Jenny fought hard for this. All of it. The relationship, the baby, the career, it's all you've...
Well, just going back to school later in life. I mean, I know what that's like. I did that in my 30s. You're doing it now. I mean, it's not easy, so congratulations.
Thanks, Sherry.
So the subject is relationships, because Sherry has a new book called The Marriage and Relationship Junkie.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you, Jenny.
And I've been looking through it. And one thing that always comes to mind that people ask me about is what, because I'm dealing mostly with primary addiction and, you know, unemployment and violence and drugs and ODs. And so the spouse, whether, and often, and it's now shifted to almost 50-50, you know, that it's 50% female, 50% male.
In treatment.
Drug addicts, which is refreshing to know that the women are stepping up and bringing their percentage to the table.
Stigma must be down.
So I've dealt with husbands and or wives that ask me continuously or over and over again, what does in sickness and in health fucking mean at this point?
Like, how much do you stay in?
Well, you know what I mean?
It's just like the addiction becomes unmanageable when you're in a relationship and your life is becoming unmanageable because you are obsessed over that addict or alcoholic, which is
how
what happened to me.
How can you not be when somebody's ODing and not a father to their children or mother to their children?
You are.
How do you not
be
affected by that?
You get your own program. You go to Al-Anon. You get your own 12-step program, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But eventually, like for me, I started getting sick. I got shingles, started losing my hair, my anxiety. Skyrocketed. I knew it was time to call it quits. But of course, that wasn't enough because I am.
That was just the beginning.
So I get divorced and then I take them back.
Oh, of course.
And then he relapses again. But this time I am done. I can promise you that. And I'm very happy. But I had to get to where I got. And that's just part of the disease of relationship and love addiction and marriage addiction.
But we're not robots. So no. I would imagine he's probably going to get well. And then what?
That's okay. I hope he does.
Right?
I'm in a really good place. I needed to get to this place.
But you got
to
help people understand that a lot of people aren't in that good place.
And so I'm going to say this. If you choose to stay with your addict or alcoholic, that's okay. There's no shame in that. Just have a good program in your life. You can love an addict or alcoholic if it's not causing you to spin out of control. If you can live your life and have your line in the sand and your boundaries, great. I couldn't do that anymore. So I had to move on.
And Jenny, I would say, what is the other side of the coin? There's a lot of sex addiction in male population, I would say. And what are women to do? Because that's kind of your field where you understand how destructive porn addiction and sex addiction can be in a marriage. And what is in sickness and in health? What does it mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated, right? Because a lot of sex addiction, there's that destruction of the intimacy, the physical intimacy, because one person's physical capacities go elsewhere, right? And so whether it's a man or a woman, I think porn is actually playing a huge role in that, because we're just developing some really unrealistic ideas of what we should be doing in the bedroom, how we should look in the bedroom and in our real lives, and how we should treat people, right? And so in sickness and in health, like Sherry was saying, if you can have healthy boundaries, if you can have a threshold, this is my critical max, this is what I am unwilling to put up with, and everything up to that point, I will love you back to health. You know, like we can work through everything except...
Well, I like the sound of that. Can you explain that again? I like the sound of that.
And again, I'm going to put a fine point on what the line has to be. If it's affecting functioning and health and your own legal status, like Sherry was describing, getting sick and, you know, if you're not functioning and you're okay, now that should be your line of the sand. But go ahead, Jenny.
Yeah, absolutely. So in sex addiction recovery, you know, we worked with something called circle plans, right? It looks like a bullseye. And so everything in that bullseye is stuff that is, we're not going to put up with this. This is considered a lapse.
At the
relapse.
Center of the bullseye.
Yeah.
Center of the bullseye, right? The next ring around the bullseye is all about like slippery behavior that can land you in that bullseye, that, oh, this is not acceptable area, or can act as like an identifying marker to move you into that outer ring, which is really about healthy activities that help you stay engaged with yourself and help you stay engaged with the person whom you've married, right?
Right, so, right. So do you share that with your partner?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for both partners to have, like, if one person in the couple is struggling with sex addiction, chances are the other person is probably struggling with some boundaries, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I think it's that lack of connection, that intimacy. There's that connection that's missing when there is a sex addiction.
Well, I think same with love addiction.
Yeah, right.
I think there's a lot of disconnect going on. But
in the world.
What I'm trying to say is, I don't think we should say in sickness and in health at marriages. I think it's an old tradition that is
sickness
ridiculous.
Sickness and a health.
When women,
in so
that was
far
invented when women were property.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I think it's something that
I don't think you should be bailing on people because they get sick.
Totally.
Right.
That's this fine line that needs to be talked about.
And what can you live with? You talked about earlier about when your behaviors don't match your values. So my value was to make my marriage work as much as I could, and then I couldn't anymore. So what is your line in the sand, Bob? Like, when would you – that would be
that
like
– I just have one line in the sand. If it's negatively affecting the children, something has to be done. Mm-hmm. Right? It's a simple
rule. Not if it's negatively affecting you?
No, I can tolerate a lot of shit.
Yeah, but is that healthy?
Is that codependency, Drew?
I think most. Well, I don't think we need to jump to diagnose each other right now. I think that's like
that's so fun, though.
Get a little close here. Woo.
No, and then laughing and belittling—that's just typical of the bullying in our society.
Oh my God!
It's true. It's true.
Oh, Bob, can I give you a hug?
But we are representatives of the mental health kind of world.
Yeah.
And if we do what is socially unacceptable in the society, I don't think it's good. I think
we've all agreed that humor is something we need more of, I thought.
To label me codependent because I'm saying I can tolerate.
No, I said, are we talking about it? I didn't say you are one. I didn't call you one.
I don't want to go down rabbit hole, but you can tolerate a lot and you're not codependent.
Yes.
You can tolerate a lot. Yes. And I think we're a society that doesn't tolerate much. I think most people who aren't love addicts or people with poor boundaries or struggling with that identity are out the door as soon as you don't dress the way you want them
to.
If you gain 10 pounds. If you gain 10 pounds.
I think what you're saying is you don't like labels. You don't want judgment.
No. But he's – I think what it is if I – because speaking on your behalf. Because
I think a lot of people care about this. They want some guidelines. Yeah. And I think we're too intellectual about it.
Yeah.
And don't make it practical for people.
And there's too much on the other side where people are leaving for nothing.
Exactly.
And there's too much labeling and belittling. I agree with all that. Right. I agree with that. So
I'm just trying to get the two experts. You're the one that falls in love with junkies. She's the one that's got the sex thing, which is a huge part of marriage these days. I was at Kevin Hart's stand-up at the Hollywood Bowl. He has a whole bit on he happened into his wife's porn watching.
I so get what you're saying, Bob, because there's so much shame. So many people judged me, and especially when I took him back. I mean, I was embarrassed. I couldn't even speak
about
it. I
totally understand it.
And so I get what you're saying. And then eventually, so I think what Drew's saying is that eventually it didn't work because I was getting sick. But I tried. I really tried.
So watch this. So in Kevin Hart's stand-up, and he doesn't like people to say it because he's going town to town, but I'll just say that in his wife's porn search were not men that resembled him in any way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And he goes into that, right? Mm-hmm. Drew, what are you doing?
I'm just thinking.
You're looking in your porn.
No, I'm thinking. Yeah, I'm thinking porn. So, no, I'm thinking about it. That's a common thing. It's a very common thing.
And so, Jenny, do you ever come across this, or you're just strictly kind of in the social work helping field now? Are you in helping couples with the sex addiction?
I mean, I haven't worked with couples with sex addiction. I've worked with
quite a few men right.
who have what I would consider sex addiction. I don't know that they themselves came in identifying as that. The majority of people with whom I've worked who have who I would say have like sex addiction, came in saying like, I can't connect to anybody. I can't like get it up when I'm with somebody, that sort of thing. And then, you know, after we sort of like took it apart a little bit, turns out they're masturbating like 5 times a day to anime, to porn, to whatever it is. But that sort of like that reserve, that essence of yourself gets spent throughout the day on yourself, and then it's harder and harder to connect with people. So,
and it's an avoidant, particularly
distraction.
Totally. Something is ringing in my head, Jenny, and I don't know why I'm thinking about this, but I think it's pertinent to our conversation. But you had a very vivid sort of experience that for some reason stayed with me. And you might be bringing it up.
Go for it.
When you said you were in your career doing porn and somebody said to you, I love you during a scene.
Oh, it broke me.
Right.
Mm. Like I started to weep. Like they, like we had sex, whatever. And then, and it was for one of the softer core type of companies. I don't want to promote it here. Not a big deal, but, yeah, and then he said at the very end of the scene, like leaned over and whispered, like, I love you. And I was just like so taken aback because it had been this like really intimate moment, videotaped, whatever, it was porn, it was still intimate, right? And then to have those words coupled with that, I was just like, weeping.
And you got angry too, as I recall.
Oh yeah, like
outside
like,
the rules. That's outside the rules.
Should have told me before. Yeah, like that. It was not some. At no point did the director be like, oh, and by the way, at the end, like he whispered to the male performer, tell her that you love her at the very end. Like, we want to get her reaction, right? Like,
was it kind of like you're disassociated and then all of a sudden you like wake up when someone says, I love you, right? You're like, suddenly becomes human and you're no longer like out there. It's all of a sudden inside of you.
Well, I mean, and the same thing happened when I went into sex rehab, right? Like, people were calling me Jenny instead of my porn name. And that was really grounding. It was like, holy cow. And that's one of the things that started to unravel this like identity and this shield that I had built up around myself was that's not, you know, 26 years old and people haven't been calling me my name, the name that I will die with. People hadn't been calling me that.
So it became personal. Totally,
well, it's a real really common personal thing with celebrity addicts that they all have a name that they don't use. That's not their real name. It's just so common.
I just found Johnny Knoxville's not his real name.
I know.
That's so weird.
I know.
You mean addicts in general?
No, well, addicts in general, but celebrity addicts always. They have the name they use in public is not their name.
They kind of cover or codependents in certain cases. So, they come to L.A. and they invent an idealized perception or who they want to be, and then they live into that.
And then they're sort of living a cartoon life and start moving away from their core and start feeling weird when people try to address the core.
And the
and
problem
call them by the real name is what we would start with. We'd just start with, what's your name? And we'd say, well, that's what we're going to call you.
Yeah.
And what happens is the people that they get in relationships with are falling in love with the name.
With the persona.
With the persona. Mm-hmm. That they're not usually that person 50% of the time, at least.
Oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Listen, they can fake. They can be those people.
Not what I would have dated at all.
Say that again, Jay.
I ended up marrying somebody who is like the antithesis of everybody I've dated as Penny Floyd.
That's probably a good thing, right, Jenny?
Oh yeah. No, he's yeah.
So let's get back to America is the divorce capital of the world, and I'm fascinated by. I've been divorced 3 times, right? I'm fascinated by the
not
subject.
Not that I'm proud of it, but I'm trying to speak. Bob, are you ashamed of that?
No, I don't. I'm not. Like, my heroes are like George Jones and Hank Williams. Like, I don't care.
Okay, because there was a lot of shame for me, and that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book.
Right.
Because I felt embarrassed. Like, how do you tell someone on a date? I've been married a couple of times.
Yeah, and it evolved into that shame when I was growing up in Palm Springs. Like, Frank Sinatra been married like 7 times.
Or look at Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah, Elizabeth Taylor. So it's another way, another idea that we became very Victorian in our thinking about things over the last 30 years.
But people think, what's wrong with her? Like, why can't she stay married?
Mom would have said, you got a bad picker.
That's a bad picker? And sure. But also, to address earlier, you know, I just believed in love. You know, maybe I just didn't use a lot of my brains. Just they smelled good, they look good, and I married them.
But that is, you know, I like that philosophy. can we really fix someone? Because that's when, as the warning signs in dating are happening, you're thinking, well, I can live with that. You're talking about the boundaries, the intimacy circle, Jenny. So as you're dating, there's things you're going like, well, I don't know about this. Oh, I can get around that. Or I could live with that because you're heading
don't
towards,
fall in love with the delusion or the right, illusion.
Or think you can handle something. And can
it's the
you
same
fix
kind of
people?
Denial.
You in your book, you say, can we really fix someone? I think we can fix ourselves, right?
Right, yeah. You can't change. You can't, yeah, you can't marry
there's
potential.
This Joe Kelly's social work. Oh, sorry,
oh, go ahead, Jenny. I'm sorry.
Bring that social work in here, Jenny.
Well, it's a joke. Like, how many social workers does it take to change a light bulb? Just one, but the light bulb has to want to change.
Right. So, that's the conundrum in mental health generally, right?
Totally. Yeah. Totally. But, I mean, there's research that shows that, like, the problems that we have at the beginning of the relationships are the problems that we're going to die with. And so when we're picking our significant other, we're not necessarily picking the qualities that we love, but we're picking the problems that we can live with.
What we know, what we can relate to. Exactly.
Yeah, like if you I can deal with this problem forever.
If you had an unavailable parent, you might pick an unavailable partner. If you had an abusive parent, you might pick an abusive partner. If you had parents who were addicts or alcoholics, you might pick an addict.
Wait, go over that again. So whatever you were raised with, that's what you would
gravitate
towards.
That's what you're familiar with.
Well, you're familiar
that's what
with.
You
particularly
know.
When it's traumatic. When it's traumatic, that tends to create attraction later in life. So if it was abandoning, if it was emotionally abusive, if it was physically abusive.
Highly critical. And I've never been with somebody that's highly critical.
You never have?
No, I avoid I believe. It.
Your health?
Well, isn't there some trauma that you just cannot no way.
Yes and no. Usually end up with the same thing, though. But let's talk about it. We got to take a little break.
Okay.
Calls. We'll take calls at 323-649-8268, 323-649-8268. People on Facebook or Periscope, give us a call. We are here with Jenny Ketchum. Jenny, a website or your book, I Am Jenny. Right?
I Am Jenny. Yep.
Congratulations to you, Jenny.
And Sherry Gaba, her book, The Marriage and Relationship Junkie. We'll be right back. I want to welcome True Niagen to the show. True Niagen is a dietary supplement designed to boost a key cellular resource called NAD, also called nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. A lot of research being done on NAD, and while the science is still preliminary, I've been watching these studies for a while, and I've been really impressed. It's so exciting because these studies are showing that the increased NAD levels may potentially help with cellular metabolism, regulating circadian rhythm. And they've even hoped that this may someday slow the effects of aging. Now, while these studies are very early, the science is impressive and the biohacking community has gotten behind this research. I've been intrigued by the possibilities surrounding NAD and the research behind True Niagen. Check it out. The research is there. The literature is quite good. Check out the website for yourself. And I even had the chance before I brought these guys on board to speak with the company's chief scientific advisor. In fact, I put myself on True Niagen after speaking to Dr. Charles Brenner. Great discussion, piqued my interest further. I'm still watching this literature. Look for that interview on the Dr. True podcast in June. Now, to learn more about the research, science, and the True Niagen supplements, visit TrueNiagen.com. That is TRUNIAGEN, TrueNiagen.com. Go there today.
Ooh.
We just discovered something.
Dr. Drew blew my mind right now, ladies and gentlemen, the commercial. I actually am married a person who's very critical, but I divorced them. Drew just pointed it out.
And what I said was I was aware of that, and he's well enough now that he doesn't put up with it.
Yeah, don't live in that world anymore.
But he's still attracted to the kind of person who engages in that kind of critical input. Mm. And
we
can
give
those,
me therapy. I can tell you what my relationships were. People that were attracted to the fake name was very early on. When I was a successful musician, people were attracted to something they thought I was.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then when I got sober – That was a whole weird kind of thing where Drew told me to do the opposite. And I've heard you say that too. So I went out with somebody one night and I found it very kind of – I felt uncomfortable. I didn't like it. So
nice.
Then I thought, oh, I got to follow up with another date with this. Well, you also should be looking for things that you have common values. But I was just looking at that it made me feel uncomfortable and I didn't really feel fitted with the person. So I stuck with them for 4 years. But I love – she's great.
You take good direction, Bob.
From him, I do.
But Jenny, the whole field of the landscape of attraction is very confusing for people. And if you have trauma, attraction can be very strong to the kind of person that is like the perpetrator that was the original traumatizing individual. And that attraction never really goes away. You can just choose not to respond. Remember, we used to always tell you guys, think butterflies, not lightning bolts.
You know, and I actually use that in clinic now.
But butterflies can be the wrong move also.
I mean, they're much less often the wrong move, right? It's not everything starts with a slow burn. I mean, there's something else that you guys have said in terms of changing along with your partner. And Drew, you said this to me and it blew my mind. We're locks and keys, right?
Oh, yeah.
And when shape of your lock changes, the shape of the key has to change.
Yeah.
And I know that in terms of my attraction, you know, when I had a really close relationship with my mom, I was attracted to people who were really volatile, who were sort of like emotionally unstable, pretty much the same, but who were partiers, who were really big personalities. And then the less, like as I got sober and the relationship with my mom really started to change and the relationship with my dad started to grow, I became more attracted to people who were stable, who were like, would think ahead about things, who were fiercely loyal. And that's how I think probably how I ended up marrying my husband.
I was going to ask you, Jenny, what are the qualities that he has that attracted you?
In addition to what Sherry just asked, tell us the story about your dad too. Thank you for sharing that with me if you're comfortable sharing it with everybody else.
Yeah, of course. We want to cry. So, you know, both my dad and my husband are just fiercely loyal, kind, generous men. And, for as much as I'm like, let's sell everything, and not in like a mania kind of way, like, let's sell everything and move to, you know, but he'll be like, well, let's think about this first, right? And like, so we really come together, but. You know, the year before I went to rehab, I started talking to my dad again, and the beginning of that year, actually. And we hadn't spoken in like 13 years.
That's something.
Yeah. And anyway, with the help of a lot of therapy and time, this is the slow burn, Bob. This is the butterflies, you know, like it wasn't like relationship, you know, it was like, you know, when I talked to him that first time, I said, how do we do this? And he said, we just keep calling each other back. And we did. And so, you know, God, but it's been 9 years now. And the day after our baby shower, so January 22nd, because we had the baby shower on my 6 year sobriety anniversary, they made me a pie with a six on it because, I don't know, they still sort of, like, a lot of my friends sort of grapple with, like, the cake idea, like giving you a cake.
Mm-hmm.
So they just baked goods. But my dad got diagnosed with stage 4 liver cancer, primary liver cancer, and was given, like, 2 to 3 weeks to live.
That's so, oh, my God.
Aww. Yeah, we transferred all of our care, like, our prenatal care down there. Because she was due on the 19th, and then we found out that she was breech. She flipped at like the last minute, and so I had to have a C-section. And my dad had said that he wanted to wait until she came, and then we found out that I had to go through surgery and everything. And I told him, you know, I'm going to need you in the operating room, and I just feel so blessed that he and I kept calling each other back, you know, because I got to spend the last 3 weeks of his life at his bedside. I stopped going to work.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you.
Go for it.
And it is a story. Bob and I have been talking lately about forgiveness and humility and acceptance and this kind of stuff. And to me, I get chills when I think how powerfully
healing it is.
But you had to experience those phenomena that we're chanting about all the time with starting with, I imagine, forgiveness.
Yeah.
But writ large, I mean, you like dove into it. Like, very few people do. So it's a wonderful example of the rewards that can be reaped from being forgiving and accepting and loving.
Yeah, and you know, I think what was really wonderful about my participation in anonymous programs is that it helped me to understand that, like, he had to forgive me too. Like, I wasn't the most pleasant of people, you know? And I mean, God in the executor of his estate, and in going through probate, I've had to come upon their divorce papers. Ugh, don't do that. you know, but my sister and I had to look for something very specific. And so we're going through everything. And God, he saved every email that I wrote him, and they were just cruel. And so we both had to forgive each other, you know? And I mean, granted, I was like 13, I was a kid, and I was being influenced by my mom, and he still had to forgive me too, so.
But now that you're a mom, I think you would see that it's pretty easy to forgive as a parent as compared to the forgiveness challenges of being a child of a parent who misbehaved.
Yeah,
that's a bigger challenge, a taller order.
Yeah, I'm so glad I did.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's why forgiveness is a powerful, powerful healing thing in our society, and it's gone, and it's frowned upon.
And you have to have humility in order to come at the forgiveness, right?
And yeah. Don't forget self-forgiveness, not just forgiveness.
Well, we'll talk about that. That's really important.
Well, part of healing through a love or marriage relationship junkie situation is to have self-love.
Compassion.
Compassion.
Pointed it out greatly is that you keep trying, you keep having an open heart, you keep doing it, and it doesn't end well, and then we're supposed to feel ashamed, and you have to forgive yourself.
I mean,
like,
you don't just wake up one day and go, oh, I want to have 4 failed marriages, or oh, I want to be a junkie, I want to, you know, end up homeless, you know? So there are reasons that you get to these places in your life, and to, you know, look at all those pieces and understand them and heal from them.
There's a lot of guys that I know that have had a couple of failed marriages that just don't even date. They're just asexual and just have, they'll say, and this is in their late 40s, early 50s, it's just not in the cards for me, right? Mm-hmm. So then what is? Dogs and like watching
TV? No,
Netflix binging. Love Netflix binging.
But it's flip side of the same coin, whether you're sexually addicted or sexually anorectic, whatever it is, it's the same phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And it's that middle zone that everyone's uncomfortable with. You can't do it alone.
But I'm saying people give up because of the shame of failing.
I understand. I understand. But I would argue that if you really were to dig into that person, it's probably a little flipping and flopping around excesses and anorexia.
It's probably different things. And I think you're right about the sexual anorexia. We don't talk enough about that. Yeah. But after, you know, people get sober, sometimes that exists. Yeah. It's like,
one guy in particular I'm thinking of is addicted to 12 steps. Right?
That's interesting.
I think, Jenny, you've probably seen that where, they're 20 years sober, go to a meeting twice a day, live in this. Because in the big book, I love this. I read it when I was about 8 years sober, when I was still going to a meeting a day pretty much. And it says, this program is a design for living, a bridge back to the real world. And I was like, what? I read it like 5 times. Like, what the hell does that mean? And I concluded that means that the AA world is not the real world.
Most people conclude, I don't need to do this. I've been a couple meetings. I'm fine. I'm bridging back to the real world.
Exactly.
I'm ready to go.
Oh,
exactly.
Oh, new people.
Maybe they shouldn't have written that in the big book.
Maybe, because it didn't.
It really
woke me up. Like, am I? And then I had a great sponsor who told me, you know, it's easy to be king of kindergarten when you've been in it for 20 years. What are you doing to challenge yourself? And that's what led to therapy and to Al-Anon.
And other paths.
I got to tell you something. I started going to Al-Anon when I was 13 years sober. That's 9 years ago. I still go. I still don't feel like I belong in it.
Oh, that's a lot of addicts report that. Because a lot of them are, you know, they feel like they're talking about us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just don't. It's not as concrete to me as AA is. Yeah, there's an AA rule that's
stop
easy.
Drinking.
Don't drink.
Right.
Right.
The lines that you live live with Sherry and you live with Jane. Those are lines that are.
And it's certainly not as fun as an AA meeting. They don't laugh at Al-Anon meetings.
Let me take a couple of emails
or
here.
Or SAA. No laughing.
This is from the website, drdrew.com/contact. For all of us, thank you for Celebrity Rehab. After watching, I realized I needed to get sober. I have 18 months minus one night of weakness and 6 months continuous sobriety.
I like that minus one night of weakness. Yeah. I like that.
I don't think you don't have to say even a relapse. Just like it's just
one night of weakness.
One night of humanity. Yeah,
right. It's like less shaming.
Imperfection. Yeah. Big deal.
Totally.
Taking one day at a time. So grateful every day that I'm the best version of myself. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And this is I'm going to give the name Melissa. Thank you, Melissa. God bless you. You will derive dividends. Now, previous unsuccessful inpatient treatment and 12-step meetings. So here's this one. Family alcoholic boyfriend denies my alcohol dependency. I question it. Used medication in the past, but stopped suddenly about a year ago. I think they mean opiates. Could I possibly expect success from CBT and or medication while drinking in moderation?
That's a lot of things there.
Yeah.
To cope with life.
Her boyfriend doesn't think she has a problem?
Right. Family and an alcoholic boyfriend denies my alcohol.
Well,
addiction.
If he's drinking, he'll miss his drinking party, friend.
Right.
If you get sober.
Is it a girl or a boy?
It's a girl. This is back to Jenny's lock and key analogy, mm-hmm. which is if she starts getting well, all these people around her aren't going to dig it,
mm-mm.
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Going to get real uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, CBT works, you know, like it's an evidence-based program. It works, and only you're going to know if you can drink in moderation by trying to drink in moderation. So if that's the route that you need to take in order to.
But isn't the whole of 12 steps cognitive behavioral therapy?
Yes,
I mean,
is.
I think
yes,
we highfalutin.
It can be.
It really is.
I think it's
like
the law of attraction.
But the educational variety is how I got sober. It was
the books. The workbooks are CBT.
Yeah,
they are.
And it's changing belief system, reframing them to something else.
And evolving and starting to recognize what they're saying is right. One of the greatest things that ever happened to me through 12-step world was they told me when I first got into it what was going to happen, and then 10 years later I looked at it, and exactly what they said would happen happened.
Yeah.
And that you can't deny. And that's cognitive behavioral therapy.
Well, no, and Jenny, I would argue that it's a little bit CBT. You can sort of get what you need. You can apply it the way you need it, right? What you're going to respond to, you can use. So if you're more responsive to CBT, there's more of a CBT component. There's also
DBT.
And DBT.
For the mindfulness piece.
And an emotionally focused therapy part. Right. The fourth and fifth step can be deeply EFT. But what do you say, Jenny?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is definitely an eclectic approach to it's eclectic. It is. It's CBT. It's DBT. It's definitely emotional focused therapy. There's a lot of, I think, probably ACT involved in it too, like identifying your values and like trying to live a valued life.
Definitely. That's a really interesting thing. So living a certain kind of life. A lot of you didn't have this so much, but Barry had. I had to live a certain life from the outside in. Then the inside changed. You always talk about your internal changes. Barry had to change the outside before a friend of ours that we worked with. Had to change the outside first.
How he behaved in daily.
He had to lead a certain kind of life all the time. And then the inside started coming along. So, again, that's another sort of thing that you're offering.
Could also be positive psychology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you need a cheerleader. I think every alcoholic, every person struggling with any of this needs somebody that's that kind of not manipulative, manipulatable person that's not directly in their lives that can be a supporter and an encourager. And that ideally is the sponsor role, but the sponsor role has become so many other things.
Oh, yeah.
It's so
weird.
That's
a whole other subject.
Right.
Another email. I come from a broken family. When I was a kid, my mom had mental illness, almost killed me. Now that I'm 40, I run from. This is the
everything.
Language is. No, I give my kids everything I run from. But I run from relationships. Every relationship with a man, what's wrong with me? Is this normal? Well, it's understandable. It's not normal.
You need somebody to take that stuff out and sit with you and put it out all on a table so you can start to look at it.
Now,
get some therapy, girl.
That's exactly right.
That's what I meant. But people, when you say therapy, therapy is not very popular in the American public. If you look at census reports about does therapy work, it is very low that people believe
that
it works.
What people are doing more of, which I have mixed feelings about, is life coaching.
Right. And sober coaching. I don't like it either. I don't like it.
And not only that, probably the reason that they don't trust psychotherapy is they get three visits or four visits. And the insurance company goes, you're fixed now. And they're like, well, you know.
Now we're going to go down a rabbit hole. That is true, though, for sure.
I know.
But I want people to understand that the people that you're hearing these heroic stories of triumph and overcoming, whether it's Jenny's or Sherry's or me or whoever, it always involves serious therapy. You can't get well without that component.
With skilled, trained, licensed
people. And that it doesn't work because you went to three marriage and family therapist sessions and ended up getting a divorce, and for the rest of your life you bad talk and shit talk therapy. That's what's happening, mm-hmm. and we need to hold these people accountable. It worked for me. It saved my life.
Well, what's really scary about addiction therapists is that there aren't as many as you might think, and sometimes mm-hmm. they don't understand addiction. And
who are you talking to? We deal with this all the time. We've dealt with this our entire career.
And
in my profession, it's out of control.
And to defend them, because she and I run the same circles in some of the rehab worlds, to defend them, I don't think I would be the skilled clinician that I am had I not worked in a psychiatric hospital. I think all chemical dependency people should have to do a round of training
component. You were in a psych hospital in a medically managed abstinence unit, which was an island in a psychiatric hospital.
No, I went around to the locked units.
No, I know. But
I know Joe Horosti. Come on.
No, but listen. But if you just work in a psych hospital, you may shift all the way to that kind of thinking.
Oh, yeah, dark
side.
That
was one of the best experiences I ever had, was working in a psych hospital. And also, I want to mention isn't just talk therapy. You know, we've kind of skimmed across trauma.
Yeah.
So if there's, you got to find the right trauma therapist,
EMDRs,
someone that's going to
bodily based therapies and neurofeedback, somatic experience, and all that stuff. Yes,
yeah.
All really good.
Drew is right though. They will not authorize sessions. I don't know what's going on in healthcare in the last 18 months. It is crazy what is going
on. Talk about the rehab.
There's no coverage.
Yeah. Wait till we go
there's
to single
no
payer,
buddy.
Single payer will be 10 times worse. Just prepare yourselves.
I just don't want to pay, and I'll pay cash.
I wonder if that's why I'm getting busier. You're saying they're not paying the rehab?
They're not paying. No. They're not. Insurance is not authorizing sessions for depression. You don't get 10 sessions. You get three.
You get an assessment. I did therapy for 11
years. It's really tightened up. And I can tell you in the mental health and the chemical dependency side, it's tightened up because of the abuses of the recovery industry.
Right. Yes, that's true.
You're right.
And there's a lot of rich MFers around Southern California, and I hope they're happy.
And not a lot of sober people. So, there's no relationship between the amount of money these guys made and the benefit to the patient.
Oh, that's so disturbing.
It is very disturbing. And now, before we wrap up, there are two people here that I think have had a successful relationship. Yes, we've been talking about broken relationships. So, do we have anything to...
Oh, please.
Yeah, let's ask Susan.
I would love that.
She looks terrorized by this question.
Yeah, what has made your relationship work all these years?
Yeah, don't screw up my social media moment here, okay?
There's one thing threatening our relationship.
Take the caller.
No. We'll do that next time.
We want to hear.
Was it my 11 years of therapy? Was it therapy you've done?
The therapy was helpful.
Okay.
I probably need more, but I don't know how you put up with me either. So.
Well, should I put up less?
I've witnessed it, and you guys give and take like no other couple I've seen. I can just, that's all I'll say. You give and take.
Compromise.
You
compromise.
Well, I would argue we...
I've seen her take such looks from you, Dr. Drew. and I've seen him take such BS from you.
Thank you, Bob.
But there's something loving about that.
Aww. Well, I think we want to be in it, right? I think when you get right down to it, we like our lives. We like each other. But some people don't talk about that much is forming a life and a family and stuff is part of this too. It's a life and a relationship.
I'm mostly with you two the last 5 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like I would find myself going, don't talk to me like that or I'm out of here.
Well, you have to, yeah, no, that's
do you say that behind closed
doors? No, I don't. You have to be
How
flexible.
Do you not say that, Sherry?
Tolerance,
what, these
I guess.
People are yeah. Martians right
no,
here.
No, you're asking the wrong person. So much the wrong
well,
person.
It's different. It's different when you're working with somebody because, you know, I've seen Drew work as a doctor and he bosses people around all the time. And that's just his work ethic.
It's
and
just
I've
the military. You just carry out your orders.
And you just don't take it personally when you're working. You know, obviously, if he did that.
So I don't do that to you on the outside.
And when you do it at other times, I tell you, to stop
react.
Analyzing me or stop. Don't
you,
talk to me.
Like left brain,
she'll say
right
don't
brain.
Talk to me like
are
that.
You like more logical? You're more emotional.
Yes, a little bit.
I'm
but,
totally
but the
right
one
brain.
Thing, the one thing I think we've gotten to is, if we fight, we're not looking for a winner.
There you
because
go.
If there's a winner, there's a
we
loser.
We fight as a team.
Yeah, Jenny. Or we think of it as not having to win. It's just there'd be a disagreement. But if we fight to the finish, then the relationship loses. Right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'm not a fighter.
Yeah, and she doesn't like even arguing.
I
like
hate
arguing. I like arguing.
Even when he talks to me, when we first started dating, he would just be talking to me. I'm like, stop yelling at me.
I just be talking. Why are you always yelling? It's like Saturday Night Live skit.
I've gotten used to it. I've gotten used to it over the years.
But to be fair, there was a disconnect in what I was saying emotionally, and I wasn't paying attention to how it was impacting and landing. And that's
more
real.
Logical.
But listen to him.
Do what I do.
Listen to him. Everything's emotional. Every word that comes out of his mouth. I mean, the dog went pee-pee. The dog went pee-pee. I'm like, okay, great.
He's very dramatic.
Or it didn't go pee-pee. And I'm really mad because I was out there for about an hour with that dog and it didn't pee.
That's my latest thing.
The dog's not going to
pee. Oh, yeah, he does, but it does it in the wrong places.
And I have selective hearing, too, because I had triplets and I don't hear anything anymore.
Yeah, Jenny, imagine doing three of these. Can you imagine that? That's another thing. Don't you want to give Susan an award for that?
Totally.
Honestly, like after the first month, so she had tongue, lip, and cheek tie, and so she was basically like a baby Wolverine. And I kept thinking of you, Susan, and like I just don't know how. Like I'm terrified to have another kid because what if it's twins?
Oh.
Or what if it's triplets? Ah. Like, what if it doesn't sleep? Like,
oh,
she
yeah.
sleeps, you know.
Yeah.
What if one has brain surgery?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I'm lucky enough to have the greatest mother-in-law who helps. The other day, I don't know, it was Friday. Elvis is out of school for summer break, right? It was the first time on a Friday he was home, and there was three adults, me, my wife, and her mom. We were outgunned by a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All of us were just,
I understand.
What the fuck is going on? yelling at each other that we're not doing it right. That's just what two.
Wait till you become a grandparent. I'm a grandparent. I have a 2-year-old.
Oh, you get the best. He has a whole story about
don't
that.
Don't want to be a grandparent.
Grandparents are the best.
Well, you're not quite ready because your kids are a little younger.
Yeah,
but
I'm enjoying my life
oh,
right now.
Greatest.
Do you love it?
Oh, my God, I love it.
Why? Because you can go home.
I just feel
the best parts of parenting.
That's, of course.
Right.
You know, because I was a single mom, so I don't, yeah. Definitely, because I just love her. I just love her, and I love to do this bonding thing with her. And I'm seeing all the things that make them grow and become great people.
It is the greatest.
All right, wrap it up, Jenny. As always, congratulations. You're an inspiration. I am Jenny. Get the book, and we'll keep me posted on the parenting and the baby. Susan can't stop looking at your baby. She thinks
I'll send you guys more
adorable
videos.
Baby.
Yeah,
I've gotten a lot of baby pictures this week, but this one's like right up there.
That's what she keeps talking about. Oh my God!
I was going to show the video, but she wants her privacy.
That's
so
fine.
Okay.
And then of course she ends up on the anyway. Here we are.
So good to see you, Jenny.
Right.
Oh, so good to see you.
Appreciate people telling a friend about the podcast. Also, go to get on the contact list, drio.com/contact. You get a weekly email. We've got the opioid series there. Don't forget to go to drio.com, click through on the sponsor banners. We appreciate it, both Bergamot, Hydrolite. These are products that we can stand behind. Amazon link, don't forget that as well. For the Hydrolite purchase, you get 30% off, Drew18. For the Bergamot, you get 25% off if you use the code Drew. Of course, the book, Marriage and Relationship Junkie.
Thank you.
Kicking Your Relationship.
Love it. Very great
kicking
read.
Your
Thank
Obsession.
You. Well, thank you for having me.
Everybody that reads it likes this book. You know what I mean?
Really
there's a
good
lot
reviews.
Of, lot
yeah,
of great
Farrah,
reviews.
Farrah Abraham loved
yes,
it.
Yes, that's a shout. She was on vacation and she stuck it on her towel and Instagrammed it. It was wonderful.
She loves it. She told me.
Thank you.
Don't forget, drio.com, all my stuff
Let
is there.
Let me ask Jenny one thing before we go. Jenny?
Yes.
Are you there? How come you
yes,
never worked in recovery up there?
Recovery up here isn't really great.
Well,
honestly.
Guess what? Like, Bobby Forrest is coming up there.
Oh, team up.
Are you really?
Yeah, up in Queen Anne area. Where is that?
Oh, you fancy girl, you.
He doesn't know where it is yet.
Yeah,
Queen
give
Anne.
Me a holler.
I'll call you. I'd love to have you part of it. Okay, cool.
That'll be a powerful team, you two.
Okay.
Dr. Akam, check out the KBC podcast. Get that also at kbc.com. Me and Lauren Savon, we're there every day. This Life, hashtag You Live, of course, the new Swole Patrol.
Don't die.
Don't do. Bob Forrest, Adam and Dr. Drew Show. At This Life podcast, also tell your thoughts at hashtag You Live. Any Twitter, anything for you?
Oh, it's somewhere. Don't die.
Don't die. Just hashtag don't die.
Just look for that.
All right, y'all. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Bye-bye.
All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBC, being Lauren Savon, 790 Midday Live Talk Radio, Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Sing One I Do By Myself, the Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob, Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, and his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, Dairy W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com, drdrew.com/contact. You'll also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at drdrew.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.